But if you're like me, the first time I read this, I was a little bit upset. It appears first in the book of Malachi, chapter 1. It's talking about how he's loved Israel. I have loved you, says the Eternal, but you say, how then, how have you loved us? And he says, was not Esau Jacob's brother? Declares the Eternal. Yet I have loved Jacob, but I have hated Esau. And I have made his mountains a desolation and appointed his inheritance for the jackals of the wilderness. These were twin boys. I mean, it just strikes you in your human feelings of fairness and love and equality and acceptance. How dare him? You know, how dare God do that? And in that way. Now, the Apostle Paul in the book of Romans, chapter 9, talks about this very same thing. And he quotes this verse from Malachi. He quotes it. Now, in the book of Romans, Paul is trying to show the lineage and the choosing of the promised people. You know, it came first of all through Abraham. God said, I'm going to make of your seed a great nation and all that. Actually, Abraham was not the sole person. Because Abraham had other people. He had other children. He had a child by Hagar, Ishmael. That wasn't the person that God was going to make into a great nation and carry on his covenant. After Sarah died, Abraham remarried. He took a woman by the name of Keturah. He had children by her. Those weren't the people. If it weren't for Sarah, you had to have Sarah. It wasn't enough for just Abraham to go out and have a child. It wasn't Abraham's child. It had to be Abraham and Sarah's child. Otherwise, you wouldn't have had Isaac, and that was the person that God had promised. And he promised it to Abraham, and it had to be with Sarah, not with Hagar, not with Keturah, not with somebody else. And it came through that lineage. And then you have these two boys. And he says in Romans 9, and not only this, but there was Rebekah also, when she had conceived twins by one man, our father Isaac, he says. For though the twins were not yet born and had done nothing good or bad, so that God's purpose according to his choice would stand, not because of works, but because of him who calls. It was said to her, during the time she was pregnant with two twins, and they were kind of fighting in her womb. You know, she said, what's going on? And so it came to her that the older will serve the younger. She was told there are two nations in your womb, two peoples, two different peoples are going to come out of there. The older will serve the younger. And Paul writes in verse 13, chapter 9 of Romans, Romans 9, 13, just as it is written, Jacob I loved, but Esau I hated. Now you say, well, does God hate anybody? Well, the word could be loved less. And in comparison to how much he loved Jacob, it looked like, you know, he hated Esau. He loved him so much less, it seemed like he hated. And Paul even asked the question, what shall we say then? There is no injustice with God, is there? May it never be. For he says to Moses, I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. So then, it does not depend on man who wills or man who runs, but on God who has the mercy. So you have these two children. Now, a lot of times I know that people want to make a big deal out of Gentile and Israelite. You ever hear that phrase? One is first a Gentile and the other is an Israelite. How different is it to be a Gentile versus an Israelite? How different? How much difference? Well, let me tell you. You have two little boys in the womb of Rebekah. One of them was a Gentile, and the other one became an Israelite. One of them was a Gentile. All Esau and all his descendants became Gentiles. And what does Gentile mean? It means a nation. It means somebody not part of the covenant God was going to establish through Abraham. That's all it means. Doesn't mean necessarily a different race. They were of the same race, were they not? Twins in the same mother, the same father. One became a Gentile, the other became Israel. Now Esau and Jacob were different. They were totally different people. The Bible says in Genesis chapter 25, Genesis 25, verse 27. And when the boys grew up, Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the field. But Jacob was a peaceful man. The word Hebrew word for peaceful meant harmless. It's often used of a beast that is not known to be dangerous. In other words, it's something not wild. It's not prone to gore. The other definition of this word, it means unscathed. Also, it means devout or upright, something that is peaceful, tame, upright, harmless. It won't hurt you. So when the boys grew up, Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the field, and Jacob was what? A peaceful man, a tame man, a more devout man, living in tents. He was not a gambler. Now, what does that say about Esau? Esau probably a very likable guy, very likable, very lovable guy. He's out there, you know, in the wilds. He loved nature. He loved to get out and see if he could hunt the deer and so on. Now, the Bible says this in verse 28. Now, Isaac loved Esau because he had a taste for game. I mean, Isaac loved that fresh deer meat, that fresh hunting. You know, he was out there, and hey, Dad, look what I got! I got a brand new buck there. I got him with my arrow, and but Rebekah loved Jacob. So now we have a divided household. Isaac loved Esau. Rebekah loved Jacob. Now, what does that mean? Loved? It means I favored, I love that one further more. I love that person more. And that's what happened here in this divided household. When Jacob had cooked stew, now we're reading chapter 25, dropping down to verse 29. When Jacob had cooked stew, Esau came in from the field and he was famished, exhausted, hungry, starving. He hadn't found anything. He'd been out. You know, you keep walking and your blood sugar goes down. You're using up your calories and you're very hungry. And Esau said to Jacob, please, let me have a swallow of that red stuff. That red stuff there, the stuff you got in the bowl. It looks like it's like red. For I'm famished. Therefore, his name was called Edom, red. You know, hey, red, you like red stuff? Okay. But Jacob said to him, first, sell me your birthright. Esau said, well, I'm about to die, so what good is my birthright to me? Jacob said, first swear to me. You got to swear to me now, not just enough to say, swear to me. So he swore to him, and he sold his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew. And Esau ate and drank and rose up and went on his way. This is what the Bible says in verse 34. Thus Esau despised his birthright. Despised meant he thought of it as useless, valueless, not something that he wanted. Esau despised his birthright. This verse concludes an episode, a summary, a statement which reveals the underlying significance of Esau's actions. To despise meant to treat something as worthless and treat it with contempt. Throw it away. Useless, worthless. And what was a birthright? In the Bible, the birthright was belonged to the eldest son, the firstborn son. It had to be given to the firstborn son. And in the Bible, the Bible takes plenty of time to tell you that in the book of Deuteronomy, if a man has several wives, and they were allowed to take more than one wife, if a man has several wives and he has a child by the firstborn is from the wife he doesn't like the most, okay? He loves this wife more, but he doesn't like this wife as much. And what happens if he has a child by the wife he doesn't like as much, and that's the firstborn of his children, that child still gets the birthright. Cannot deny that child the birthright. And what's the birthright? Birthright is several things. Number one, the birthright is a double portion of the inheritance. That's number one. Number two, the child who is has the birthright becomes the successor to the father in taking care of the family. He is he's the leader of the family. He takes care of his mother. He takes care of the other kids. He is also the spiritual leader. The spiritual leader. He becomes sort of like the patriarch. He leads the family in God's way and God's religion and God's truth and all that. He's supposed to do that for the family. It was a tremendous amount of responsibility. It was a tremendous amount of privilege to be that first child with the firstborn first birthright. This is what Deuteronomy 21 verses 15 through 17 says about a man who has more than one wife. If a man has two wives, and the one loved and the other unloved, and both the loved and she, the unloved, have borne him sons. If the firstborn son belongs to the unloved, then it shall be in that day that he wills what he has to his sons. He cannot make the son of the loved the firstborn before the son of the unloved, who is the firstborn. In other words, he has to give, but he shall acknowledge the firstborn son of the unloved and giving him a double portion of all that he has, for he is the beginning of his strength, and to him belongs the right of the firstborn. And that's the birthright. The right of the firstborn is the birthright. The firstborn himself, however, could lose the birthright because of an evil sin, an evil deed. Just as Reuben lost the birthright. Of all of Jacob's children, Reuben, who came from Leah, lost the birthright. Why? Look at 1 Chronicles chapter 5. 1 Chronicles chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. Now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, for he was the firstborn, but because he defiled his father's bed, this birthright was given to the sons of Joseph, the son of Jacob, the son of Israel, so that he is not enrolled in the genealogy according to the birthright. So Reuben lost the right of birth, the birthright. Though Judah prevailed over his brothers, and from him came the leader, yet the birthright belonged to Joseph. Joseph then took on the right of birth. And what did Joseph do for his family? You see it in Egypt. What did he do? He took care of them. Y'all come on down here. I'll take care of you. Come on down to Egypt. And he provided for them. He took care of his dad. He took care of it, even though he still fulfilled that job, even though he was sold into Egypt, became a slave. So you had Jacob, loved by Rebekah. You had Esau, loved by Isaac. Esau, a man of the field. Now, when you're a man of the field, there's no sure thing, is there? How many have ever hunted? Do you ever hunt for game? Anybody here ever hunt for game? Ever? Okay. Is there a sure thing? You go out, you might not find anything. Even fishing, it's not necessarily a sure thing, but, you know, it's a little bit more sure than hunting, especially if you use nets. You go out hunting, it's not a sure thing. It's a gamble. You might hit it, you might miss it. And you can't count on it. You can't have a stable family income from hunting. Nobody can get a stable family income from hunting. You can get a stable family income if you're a trapper, or you can get a stable family income if you're a guide to other hunters who pay you to take them around, even though you might not find anything, you still get paid. But there's not a stable family income. So Esau, you know, he just the fact that he was like this. Now, there's another passage about Esau in chapter 26. Exodus chapter 26, dropping down to verses 34 and 35, it says this: when Esau was 40 years old, he married Judith, the daughter of Beeri, the Hittite. You know, I don't care about our family. I don't care about getting somebody inside our clan. I want to get married. I like those Hittite girls. I want one of them. He married Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and he married Basemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. I like those Hittite girls. I want one of them. I want two of them. So he got two of them. But verse 35 is a very telling verse. And it says, and they brought grief to Isaac and Rebekah. Your daughter-in-laws can bring grief. And they brought grief to Isaac and Rebekah. I don't know how they brought grief. They may have taken Esau away. They may have taken Esau away from the religion of God. They may have taken Esau into paganism and pagan customs. They may have taken Esau into all kinds of other things, you know, that the Hittites did. So they brought grief to Isaac and Rebekah. And after this, after what Esau did, Rebekah overheard and made a plan. And this is, you see, in chapter 27. Just right in the next verses of chapter 27 of Genesis, beginning in verse 1. Now, it came about when Isaac was old and his eyes were dim to see. He couldn't see. Evidently, he may have had cataracts that completely covered his eyes. He called his older son Esau, and he said to him, my son, he said to him, and he said, here I am. Isaac said to him, now, behold, now I am old, and I do not know the day of my death. Now then, please take your gear, your quiver and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me, and prepare a savory dish for me, such as I love. You know, I just love that meat. I just love it. And bring it to me that I may eat it, so that my soul may bless you before I die. I want to give you a special blessing. Now, he'd already sold his birthright, but this is a special blessing now that came. Now, Rebekah, verse 5, was listening to this. She overhears Isaac saying this to Esau. And who does Rebekah love? She loves Jacob. She was listening while Isaac spoke to his son Esau. So when Esau left, went to the field to hunt for game to bring it home, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, listen to me. You know, I heard your father speak to your brother saying, bring me some game and prepare a savory dish for me that I may eat and bless you before in the presence of the Lord of the Eternal before my death. Now, therefore, my son, listen to me as I command you. Go now to the flock and bring two choice young goats from there that I may prepare them a savory dish. In other words, they say, I'm going to spice it up. I'm going to have it just like your father likes, just the way he loves it. I prepared Esau's game. I'm going to prepare this one. Then you shall bring it to your father, and he may, so that he may eat and he may bless you before his death. I want you to get that blessing. Why? Because Esau's wives gave them grief. They brought Rebekah and, what does it say? They brought grief, sadness, distress to Isaac and Rebekah. So I want you to get it, Jacob. Well, Jacob answered his mother, well, behold, Esau, my brother, he's a hairy man. I'm just a smooth man. Perhaps my father will feel me, and then I will be deceiver in his sight, and I will bring upon myself a curse, not a blessing. But his mother said to him, your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice and go get them for me, Go get the goats, bring them in here. So he went out and he got them, and he brought them to his mother, and his mother made savory meat such as his father loved, and Rebekah took the best of the garments of Esau, her elder son, which were with her in the house, and put them on Jacob, the younger one. Take these garments, put them on you. She put the skins of the young goats on his hands so that they would seem hairy. She took some of the skin of the young goats, wrapped this around your hand, okay? She put the skins on the young man's hands and on the smooth part of his neck. So she also gave savory food and the bread and she had made to her son Jacob. Then he came to his father. I mean, he just plainly lied. His father said, are you Esau? You can't see. Yeah, I mean, I'm Esau. You know, really? I may feel hairy. Yeah. Oh, the food, the meat is so good. I'm surprised you're back so fast. I mean, you just went out. You must have caught a deer really quick. I'm paraphrasing the rest of this chapter. You must have got a deer really quick. Yeah, I got it, right, Dad. You know, so you have the voice of Jacob, but, you know, let me feel. Oh, yeah, your hands. And I smell. And she put the garment of Esau, so it smelled like the field, you know, like the outdoor. Yeah, you have the smell and the scent and the feel of Esau, but you have the voice of Jacob. Yeah, evidently different voices. Yeah, the voice. So he blesses him. And so he says, now may, in verse 28, now may the God of God give you the dew of heaven, the fatness of the earth, the abundance of grain and new wine. May your people serve. May people serve you. Nations bow down to you. Be master of your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be those who curse you, and blessed be those who bless you. He gives him the blessing. Came about here, and after he gets that, he finishes blessing Jacob, and Jacob had hardly left him. When here came Esau. Esau's coming in. He says, you know, I got the thing for you, Dad. He said, well, who are you? He said, I'm Esau. He said, oh, no, Esau. Then the other guy must have been Jacob. Oh, I've already given the blessing. And he said, well, can't you give me one? And he pleaded and cried, you remember? And when Esau heard these words in verse 34 of his father, he cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, bless me, even me. And his father said, your brother came deceitfully, has taken away your blessing. I can't give it back. Something about that. I can't give it back. Then he said to him, Esau said, is he not rightly called Jacob, which meant the supplanter, the guy who trips up, the guy who deceives you, gets your stuff. He took away my birthright. Behold, now he has taken away my blessing. And he said, have you not reserved a blessing for me? And Isaac replied, behold, I have made him your master. And all his relatives I have given to him as all your relatives I've given to him as servants, and with grain and new wine I have sustained him. Now, as far as you then, what can I do, my son? Esau said to his father, do you have one blessing, my father? Bless me even, thee also. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. And Isaac, his father, answered and said, behold, away from the fertility of the earth shall be your dwelling, and away from the dew of heaven from above. Your sword shall live, and your brother you shall serve. By your sword you shall live, your brother you shall serve. And it shall come about when you become restless, then you will break this yoke, his yoke from your neck, from his. So this is what happened to Esau. We have a very telling verse here in the book of Hebrews. It's in Hebrews chapter 12. The Apostle Paul, writing here, says, see to it, this is verse 15, Hebrews 12, dropping down to verse 15, see to it that no one comes short of the grace of God, and that no root of bitterness springing up causes trouble, and by that, or by it, many be defiled. And in other words, he's giving you exhortation. See to it that you don't fall short of the grace of God, that you don't get bitter, and that there be no immoral or godless person like Esau, who sold his birthright for a single meal. Let me read that in the Common English Bible. It goes like this. Make sure that no one becomes sexually immoral or ungodly like Esau, who sold his inheritance as the oldest son for one meal. Let me read that in the Complete Jewish Bible. It says, and that no one is sexually immoral or godless like Esau, who in exchange for a single meal gave up his rights as the firstborn. Christian Standard Bible says, and make sure that there isn't any immoral or irreverent person like Esau who sold his birthright in exchange for one meal. And the Darby Bible says, lest there be any fornicator. Now the word is porneia, the porno. You know, he's a porno, he's a fornicator. Most translations say he was an immoral person. Was Esau an immoral person? It appears that he just did not have much self-control. He didn't ask his parents. He was impulsive. He went down to the Hittites. He had to have these two girls. He had to have two women from the Hittites. He couldn't wait. He doesn't check with his parents. He brings these two daughter-in-laws who give his parents much grief. He goes with them in their way, probably, because here's the next word. The word is fornicator. It means porno. He's immoral. He doesn't stop himself. He has no self-control. He goes right after what he wants, and he doesn't care. The second is that the King James and the Darby Bible use this word, or profane person, that none of you should be a immoral person or a profane person as Esau, who for one meal sold his birthright. Profane person, the word profane here means godless, a person who cares nothing about religion. I don't care about religion. That's profane. He could despise his religion. He's godless. That is, I don't want to care about God. I don't care anything about God and God's ways. I don't care anything about what God says. That's a profane person. Esau became a profane person. They were twins, raised by the same mother and father, but they were so different. They went different ways. How many of, if you've had children, I've talked to women who've said, you know, I've had 4, 5, 6 kids. I could tell when this one was in the womb that this one was an excitable, this one was just, you know, going every direction, just had a lot of energy, and the other one was more placid. There seems to be the issue of temperament, that whatever the genealogical structure, whatever the chromosomes that meet, we got 24 from a father, 24 from the mother, and then when they meet, they have the dispersion of the genes. The genes account for the color of your eyes, the type of your skin, the kind of color of your hair, the kind of whether thickness or curly or whatever you have, the size of your bones, the structure of your body, the way your whole body is. All those genes have to do with that. The chromosomes, you get 24 from each parent. And the rest of it is all the gene pool, the way the genes kind of line up and disperse. So you'll see people in the same family, brothers and sisters, one may have blue eyes, the other may have brown eyes. One may have darker hair, and the other one may have blonde hair. The other may be large, and the other may be small. The other one may be this way, or the other way that way, because even though they're in the same family, they look different, they act different, they have the same. But if you match their DNA, you could say, well, you know, they come from the same family. They have similar DNA. That's why we have fathers and parental tests with DNA. The temperament is established often inside the womb, before the child is born. They become a certain way. They're like their temperament. Now, is temperament everything? Of course not. We know that nurture and the environment and the things around us can also have an effect, although it's shocking and dismaying sometimes. The twin studies, the most important things for the power of temperament in nature are twin studies. And there have been a lot of twin studies in which they gather information of twins that were separated early on in birth and given to different places, reared by different people under different circumstances. Their environment was different. Their rearing was different. And yet here they were. This one became a certain thing, a doctor, a lawyer, a pharmacist, a plumber, or this or that. And the other one became that. This one liked this particular kind of thing. That one liked that. As they begin to study them, and yet they never knew each other. They were never raised the same way. And they had very similar likes and dislikes, very similar tastes, even though they were not reared by the same family. That's called nature. That's called temperament. They were like this. They liked the same kinds of things, even though they hadn't seen each other or been around each other. Temperament had to do with it. Esau, Jacob had a temperament, and he was holding on to Esau's heel as he was born, and would come. He was being born, and here was Jacob. He was born, and I can understand Jacob's position. I can understand it too. I can understand Esau's position. Esau's angry, furious. I want to kill him. And for a long time, Jacob feared him. He's going to come and kill me. I know he's going to kill me. At the end of his life, you know, Jacob and Esau made up. Esau was protector. I love you anyhow. I mean, you know, don't, because I know you got hurt. And, you know, here comes Jacob limping. And Jacob had paid the penalty with Laban. Laban, you know, kind of deceived him and all that and made him work 14 years rather than 7 years. He was supposed to work for Rachel. He ended up working 14 years. And that was just for the daughter, you know, and very low wages and all that. But he got back at Laban, you know, with the striped things on there, the way he bred the cattle. So there's temperament here. Esau comes out, he just as he grew up, I like to hunt, I like to gamble, I like to get out there. He's impulsive, he doesn't think things through, he just acts without thinking, he doesn't look back. This is the kind of person he was. He had an appetite and he just went for it, whatever he wanted. And here he comes in from the field. Do you think he could say, well, is there any other food around here? You know, I want that porridge, I want that. And Jacob says, well, sell me your birthright. You would say, well, I'm going to think this through. Is there any other food around here? Mom, is there any other food? Dad, we got anything left over any place? No, I want that. Here it is. Take it. I'm starving. I want it. I want immediate gratification. I want it now. I want it right now. And I have to have it. And then when he was done, he just gets up and leaves like it was nothing. I give you my birthright. What do I care? Take the thing. And he walks out. In the thing of nature and nurture, there's this statement. The wicked are estranged. This is in Psalm 58. Now, it's a poetic psalm. I'm not going to make this literally, but take a look at this, the way it's stated. Psalm 58, verse 3. The wicked are estranged from the womb. These who speak lies go astray from birth. Is there such a thing as the temperament being so overwhelmingly powerful that people become something so bad? The genetic pool, the way it comes together. Now, Esau was not a murderer. Esau was not that evil. He was not a criminal. He just couldn't control himself. He went down, he had to have sex immediately, he had to have these women, he got down to the Hittites, and he didn't care who he married. Jacob was a man who was more peaceful. And when Jacob came time to marry, they said, Rebecca said, well, go to my brother. He's got some daughters. Go see my brother. He married his first cousins. So the issue of temperament, God must see this. When a child is in the womb, the way these genes are coming together, the way these chromosomes are coming together, now you know each one of us has a DNA that is virtually unique. It's like one chance in several billion that somebody has your DNA pattern. Billions, maybe. So that they can identify your DNA from somebody else, your fingerprints from somebody else. Each human being in the womb becomes unique. And you're going to say, well, how about those people who abort children? Well, that's true. There's a unique person in there. But how about people who don't abort but have miscarriages? There are all kinds of miscarriages. You know, people have the baby starts to develop. It's engendered, and then the mother miscarries for no fault of its own, just nature. It happens, and it doesn't fulfill its time in the womb. Was that child unique? Yeah, it was, but it never got born, never got developed. But it was, yes, it would have been unique. All kinds of things would have been unique. Every snowflake is unique. But God must see something. Why did God choose Jacob? Why, before they were born, Paul says, when they had neither one done anything good or bad outside the womb, why did God say the older will serve the younger? Why did he already predict that? He must have seen something. And so Hebrews says, lest there be any fornicator like Esau, or profane person like Esau, who for one meal sold his birthright. So God sees what we can't see. God's choices are made on the basis of things that you and I can never see. And that's why Isaiah chapter 55 says this, beginning in verse 8. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are your ways my ways, declares the Eternal. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. Let me read that verse 8, Isaiah 55, verse 8, in the New English Translation. It reads it like this. Indeed, my plans are not like your plans, and my deeds, what I do, are not like your deeds, what you do. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my plans higher than your plans. My deeds are higher than your deeds. Esau lost out. He probably was a man given to immoral actions. He was a man given to godlessness. He did not care for religion. He did not care for the spiritual things. He was just into the physical and the physical alone. And he paid for it. He lost his birthright. And the Bible exhorts us, don't let any of you become like that. Fornicators, immoral or profane, godless, that you would lose such a thing like Esau. So God makes choices. And so when the Apostle Paul said, is there any unfairness with God? He was right. May it never be. Because God sees, knows, understands what we cannot.